Welcome to PD's Power Hour. I'm your host, Michelle, also known as PD. And in this episode, we are back with my favorite wine girl, Pam from Cannot Be Tamed. I always love having Pam on. And this episode, we do her favorite wine, which is Barolo. And I was super excited going into this episode. I probably splurged a bit too much on the wines because I was super excited. Anywho, friendly reminder, these episodes are now being recorded for YouTube. So if you wanted to see our happy faces as we're talking through the wines and tasting them, and there may be even like a picture of a map up on the screen if you wanted to see that, please check out my YouTube page, PD's Power Minute, where that'll be posted at the same time this is released. So if you want early access to it, you should take, I've been sort of releasing them early to the Polymedia Network's Patreon. So check out the Polymedia Network Patreon page if you want these early. All that bullshit aside, at this point, let's get into the episode because Pam, honestly, at this point, needs no introduction. She's the best. We even talk about video games in this one. We dive deep into Elden Ring, World of Warcraft. So fasten your seatbelts, kids. It's gonna be a bumpy ride. Hope you enjoy Pam with Barolo. Enjoy. Welcome, Pam, back, yay, to PD's Power Hour. This one is a little bit more special. One, because this will be the second time that I actually record on video and we get to see your beautiful face. And two, we're doing, this is like the coup de grace sort of, right, for Pam wine. This is your favorite
It wine, is my right? favorite, yes. I love this wine, and it was so nice of you to send me such a... delicious looking bottle.
So the wine that we're drinking today is called, it's called Gaia, which is, again, this is backwards on screen. It's fine. It's spelled G-A-J-A. And it is pronounced Gaia, even though it looks like Gaja. this is a Barolo, and Barolo is said to be your favorite. Why is it your favorite wine?
I just love my wines, like, big and bold. I love how tannic these they are, and when you take a sip, your, like, whole mouth just, like, puckers in on itself. But at the same time, they've also got, like, that high acidity to keep it, like, fresh, and I remember trying this the first time. I was like, oh, yes, that is the wine I want to drink more of.
Yes, I also love Barolo. When I worked in the wine business, my first love is Burgundy. And one of my bosses said to me, he's like, if you really like Burgundy, you should really try Barolo because you like that high acidity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more I drank it, the like absolutely more I fell in love with it. So yay to exciting, expensive wines. Barolos are not cheap, unfortunately, but you don't care. You only live once. But since we're talking about Barolo, give me a fun fact about Barolo.
Sure. So the first one is about the municipality. So it is a municipality in Piedmont with a population of only around 700 people, and the whole place is only 2.2 square miles. So it's a very small place. It's mostly home to vineyards, but there's also a very ugly multicolored chapel called the Barolo Chapel. And it's, I guess, a tourist distraction. It's just a very colorful small church, but and also Barolo is one of 11 regions where the wine Barolo is produced. It's not all from there.
Ah, so look at you. This ugly ass church. I was like, oh, let's move there, but if they got an ugly ass church that you gotta look at all the time, maybe not. Yeah. I don't know.
I looked up the church. I was like, oh, who did this?
Maybe property around it's cheap if it's maybe a super eyesore. But give me one more fun fact.
So the other one is about the wine, and Barolo was subject to the Barolo Wars, a 30-year conflict over how to make Barolo Traditionally, it's made very slowly. The grapes are macerated for over 50 days, which is results in like the very acidic tannic taste. And wine was generally aged for more than 10 years in order to sort of mellow out a little bit in large oak barrels. However, a modernist came along and they were influenced by sort of California and the New World winemaking techniques. And they started fermenting it for only about a week in small French barrels, which ended up with like a smoother, more floral wine. And in the end, there's been some, I mean, I guess the wars are over. Some people do it the old way. Some people do it the new way. Some people compromise.
Yeah, that's one of my things. Look at you. Again, the Barolo Wars. I love it. Yeah, the Barolo Wars was really started in its height around the 70s and 80s, whenever like big juicy wines, California based, as you said, like Chateau Montelegno won the, what was it called, the Judgment of Paris in the 70s, which was a huge big deal because it was the first time that California wine won. Mm-hmm. And it was going towards that big fruit forward oaky style. And so Italy sort of kind of follows suit. And because Barolo, like, to be perfectly honest, like, I love Barolo wines, and a lot of them, even in the more modernist style, you should age.
Mm-hmm.
But who really wants to wait 30 years for all?
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Like, even our wine today from Gaia, Barolo, Dagromis, how do you say it? Dagromis? Dagromis, I think Dagromis? That's how you say it, sure.
Yeah, I think so.
This is a 2017. So it's got, you know, 2022, it's got a couple years on it. It probably could still be hanging out for at least another five, at mm-hmm. least, you know, but, you know, I don't care and it don't matter to me, honestly. But why Barolo the way it is? So Barolo, for anybody who does not know, is in the Piedmont region in Italy. And I'm going to put on a happy map. You can't see it, Pam, but there's a map here in front of our faces.
I'll have to watch the video.
The Piedmont region is pretty much in this upper boot half, like, you know, where the thigh of the boot happens here. And so that area is, for specifically Barolo, is known for its more like a little bit of clay in the soil, more alkalinity, so you get a lot more acidity and tone into the wine. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the soil is not necessarily great for growing grapes, which is always the best.
Mm-hmm.
You want shitty soil for your wines.
Mm-hmm.
And for Barolo, you have Nebbiolo, which is the grape varietal that you have in there. And Nebbiolo, like Pinot Noir, is a very thin-skinned grape, but it's super high in acidity and very fussy and really hard to grow. So that's, you know, it doesn't necessarily have, like, I guess, as much as fruit, but you can always get that from the process. And so,
right.
Yeah, always Nebbiolo, always from Barolo.
Mm-hmm.
Fun facts. So give me a fun fact about restaurants.
Okay. Can I have a sip of the wine first?
Yeah, I'm like sitting here drinking the whole time. I started drinking before we even started. And I feel like as we go through this, our teeth are just going to get darker. Although it's not super oaky, this one. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it won't stain it like black teeth at the very end.
Okay. So I looked up most expensive restaurant in the world. And apparently It is called Sublimotion in Ibiza, with a price of about $2,000 a person for a 20-course menu with wine and champagne. The restaurant is like takes place in this little pod surrounded by screens, mm-hmm. and it combines the food with a musical menu, choreographed service, virtual reality headsets, and the environment changes with each course of the meal.
Interesting.
Yeah. I admit I like a nice bougie tasting menu, but this might be a little pretentious even for me.
Yeah. Have you, like, I feel like at that point, like, I wonder if the food is any good, or is it just perception of like what you're seeing in the experience, I guess? You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. If you're having that much hoopla and spectacle, The food better be fucking good.
I mean, it looks good. Of course, the presentation is great. I don't know what the, you know, what it actually tastes like. I doubt I'll ever, I'll ever be there.
Have you ever done, like, a really, a large tasting menu before? Like, 20 is a lot, but I'm sure they're all, like, tiny bites and such, but.
I did 16 at Jill Robichon in Las Vegas.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It was like a 4-hour meal. It took forever.
Oh my god. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I worked at a restaurant that we did tasting menus for, and the highest we had, I think, was like, I mean, in terms of plates, was like 10. Mm-hmm. So, holy shit. How was it? Was it good?
Oh, it was so good. Sometimes they would bring out like 3 things on one plate, but they had this amazing stuff like crab meat with caviar and like this beautiful mushroom velouté soup. And they would come around with a bread cart with like 20 different kinds of bread and like the best butter you've ever had. In addition to the food, of course, you don't want to fill up on bread because there's going to be so much food. But yeah, it was just amazingly presented and just very opulent and everything was delicious. But yeah, I think that was definitely the biggest. I think everything else has been like maybe 9 at French Laundry.
Holy shit, you've been at some nice places.
I've gone out of my way to like spend birthdays at nice restaurants.
Oh, that's nice. I'm like the opposite. I guess from working in the restaurant industry, I'm like, I just want to sit at home and just like drink a bottle of wine and just like not. You know what I mean? I loved going to restaurants before I started working at restaurants, and then I worked at a restaurant. I'm like, oh, hell no. But give me another fun fact. I hope it's about you going to a fancy place again.
Well, I wanted this one to be local. So one of the restaurants with the biggest wine cellars in Canada is Barbarian Steakhouse, which is here in Toronto. And they built a few years back, maybe 10 or so, a 2-story underground wine cellar that is temperature controlled and vibration proof. And it houses, the number, depending on where I read, was changed, but up to 40,000 bottles of wine. And if you go to the website and you look up their wine list, the PDF is 148 pages long. And you can book out the wine cellar for dinner. If you want to do that.
how do you choose?
I don't know. I don't know how you do that. Well, I think, first of all, you just ignore everything that's thousands of dollars a bottle.
Yeah, and that cuts it down. There's a lot of those.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Have you ever eaten there?
Yeah, I went there once. It's a very old school steakhouse. Mm-hmm. Like, they come out, I'm pretty sure they bring out the actual steak and you get to pick it, but it's very like, here is your $80 slab of meat. Would you like to pay $12 for sautéed button mushrooms or French fries? So it's just very like steak, extra side. Like, it's not fancy. It's just like very plain, well-prepared meat. So
I love those kind of places, though. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, even though I do love a beautiful, fancy restaurant where, you know, you have like ridiculous decorations on it or whatever. So there's something really just primal and satisfying about just a good grilled raw steak. Mm-hmm. And it has to be raw. Has to be.
Rare?
I want it bleeding. Yes. Not raw. Oh my god. Yes. Yes, I want raw steak. I mean, I would. I have steak tartare is amazing. Mm,
steak tartare is great. Yeah.
Yes. Rare. Yeah, so I asked you to find me some fun facts about restaurants because I feel like so many of these wineries start off as restaurants. For example, Gaia did. They're 5 generations. They're a family winery, but they've also been producing wines in the region. They also started off as a little local restaurant in the Barbaresco region, which is very close to the Barolo region. Mm-hmm. The family itself is sort of the big famous producer out of those regions because they took the winery to sort of the next level with revolutionizing wine practices, introducing Bordeaux varietals into the Piedmont region in general, not just, I mean, because you only can have Nebbiolo and Barolo, but for the Langhe region specifically. Mm-hmm. And currently, they own 250 acres of vineyards in Piedmont, located in Barbaresco and Barolo.
Oh, nice.
Some of their Barbarescos are actually more expensive than the Barolos, if you can believe that. Because usually it's the opposite.
Yeah, Barbaresco's that's what I thought.
Like way cheaper than their Barolos, but not for these guys. These guys are like, nah, man, we expensive as shit, and we're going to be high-class Barbarescos. And actually, a couple of their wines, about five of them, have gotten 100-point ratings, which I'm totally, like, bullshit against point systems for wines,
because
they're just stupid, but that's still, for one winery to get five is still, like, you know, substantial. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's impressive.
When I went to Portugal, side note, we visited a winery. They have a little restaurant that's been in their family for like generations. I'm like, this is so cute. Like, it was just like a little hut. I mean, not a hut. It was a nice restaurant, you know, but it was like a little stone house. And it's been in the family for like 300 years or something ridiculous like that. And it's like, that's so, like, you know, could you imagine something in your family like that for over generations and generations, and these vineyards that have been there for that long?
That's
like,
nice. Yeah.
How beautiful is that? Can we go?
I also, I like how you said this place had a restaurant first, because I would have just thought that it would go the other way and you'd have a vineyard and they're like, well, all these people are coming here for wine. Let's get them to spend more on food.
Yeah, no, totally. So when they start producing their own wines and started selling it out of the restaurant, that sort of escalated and snowballed into, well, let's sell it out of this region, or sell it, you know, within the region and then out of the region and so forth grow. Mm-hmm. And this was like in the 1850s and such, that they're like, hey, let's do this thing. It's like, okay. Always fun to have history like that. I think that's like the one of the beautiful things that I think can be forgotten about with wine, is that so many of these wineries are people's heritage. It's their family.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of their history. And just like being an ambassador for that, or like sharing those stories with people, I think is like so nice and fun. So.
Yeah, that is nice. I would love to go to Italy. I mean, I specifically want to go to Piedmont, but I would love to just go see all those little places and see. I mean, there's just so much more history there than anything you're gonna find here. So, yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, like an ugly church.
Yeah,
in the middle of your town square.
I have a feeling it didn't start off ugly and someone renovated.
Yeah. Yes, that's usually what happens, isn't it? You like have started with this beautiful house, and then some asshole moves in and just completely destroys the kitchen and makes it exceedingly ugly.
Yeah.
And then you got to spend $30,000 to redo it. And you're just like, no, I'm good. So now it's time for my favorite fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a fun fact about dragons.
So I was confused about this one first, because I was like, what is this? I was like, is there a dragon on the bottle? And I was like, no, I think this is a pheasant. So I was like, so I'm interested into knowing where this is going.
Disappointed.
Oh, okay.
You're going to be so disappointed.
Okay, so I went the video game route, because I find that when I come on your podcast, I'm always so like, yeah, wine, and I don't really mention video games or my love of them.
So
I was looking for some Elden Ring stuff, and I couldn't really find it. I feel like it's too new. There wasn't a whole lot of lore, so I dipped into the Dark Souls. So during the Age of Ancients, dragons ruled the unformed world of Dark Souls. However, the lords rose up from the dark and challenged them, resulting in the War of Fire, in which much of the world was destroyed. The dragons were defeated and the Age of Fire began. By the time Dark Souls 1 starts, only a few dragons remain, including the Stone Dragon, which invites you to join the Path of the Dragon Covenant.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. So there's not many dragons in Dark Souls, because I feel like there's a billion of them in Elden Ring.
Well,
I know it's a different world.
They're all sort of like, I don't know, kind of like mongrel dragons. Like, they're not the real like dragons of old, the immortal ones. They're kind of hybrids and sort of like weaker bloodline dragons. So there's only a couple of the real dragons left.
Mm. I know you played Dark Souls 3 and Dark Souls 1, right?
Yeah.
Which one do you like more?
I like Dark Souls 3 more. It's just a little bit quicker. Like, the first one is a little sluggish. and the rolling and things like that. But they're both good. They both have really great worlds with like all these kind of secrets and pathways and shortcuts that I love. Just the end of Dark Souls 1 just like dips in quality from the first half of it, whereas I felt like Dark Souls 3 kind of just kept getting better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so how do you feel about, because we're playing Elden Ring right now because we've just multiplayer.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Elden Ring after beating Dark, immediately, like you just played Dark Souls 3 and Dark Souls 1. Mm-hmm. How does it feel going into Elden Ring with that fresh in your mind?
It's a little different. The Dark Souls games are so, you know, just like drops you in. It's like, have fun. And I guess Elden Ring does that too a bit, but there's so many tutorial pop-ups. And I was like, go away. Let me not know what I'm doing in peace. Mm-hmm. And I've never been a huge open world fan, although I'm getting into it. I'm really enjoying myself most when I'm in a sort of like a big dungeon that I can explore rather than just the open world. But I'm enjoying it. I'm liking what bits of story I'm getting, and the combat's really fun. It's interesting to be a magic user for the first time since I never tried it in those games. But I'm also finding, like, I took Dark Souls games as a real, like, personal challenge. I tried not to summon help or, you know, do things certain ways. Whereas in this, I'm just like, whatever. Multiplayer? Yeah. Ashes? Yeah. There's an NPC I can summon? Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. This is my first, it's not my first From Software game, it's my first Souls mm-hmm. from Software game. So I am not a purist by any stretch of the imagination. I suck so hard. I'm always like, Pam, Bruce, come help me. Let's go kill this boss. I don't care. No shame.
No shame at all. Fuck. I mean, they give you all those tools for a reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the more I've played, the more I've realized it is really a community game. Like, you're getting help from messages. You're getting help from, like, being able to summon. It's all there for a reason.
Yes. How do you feel about the dragons in Elden Ring?
I like them. I've actually found the ones that I fought that haven't run away from me, being a mounted spellcaster, they've been some of the more enjoyable fights for me. So, yeah, I like them. I felt bad about the one we murdered that was just sleeping.
But he gave you so many runes.
He did.
It's okay. It's fine. He was ablated with scarlet rot, mm-hmm. So it's fine. He's fine. He was going to die anyways. It's cool.
Apparently, the dragons out in front of them, if you kill them, they reduce his health. So what you're, I guess, I don't know if they meant to leave it how it is or if it was like a bug or something they didn't catch, but apparently if you kill all of its children out in front of him, then it dies. Like, it loses 20% of its health for each mini dragon you kill. But you can
that sounds a lot harder.
It does sound. You can just stand behind it and smack its leg and until it dies of blood
for
loss.
For 20 minutes. Yeah. I personally hate the dragons in the game because I suck so hard because I'm a dex and arcane build, yeah. And I have my little katana and I gotta get up all close and go run away and just like, fuck this shit. I can't handle this. I hate it so much.
No.
But again, I'm terrible, so it's fine. And I'm accepting that I'm a terrible game player at this game, and it's okay. It is totally okay.
I mean, you've gotten pretty far.
Yeah, help is always appreciated. and should be lauded. Like, thank you, Briz, and thank you, Pam, and thank you, my cousin John, for helping me get here today. It's like I'm winning an award. Like, I made it this far. Give me another fun fact about dragons.
So, this is about World of Warcraft, which I played for many years of my life, but it's been a while. So, one of the most important and interesting dragons in the original game is Enyxia, who is the matriarch of the Black Dragonflight. And she's interesting because in World of Warcraft, dragons can disguise themselves as humans, so they have, like, human aspects. And for a long time, Enyxia disguised herself as Lady Katrana Prester, and she advised and manipulated the King of Stormwind. And eventually, when she got caught, she kidnapped his son, and the game includes this big, lengthy quest so that you're able to go fight her in her lair, and after you defeat her, her head gets hung outside Stormwind Castle.
Aww! Poor dragon. Mm-hmm. Poor lady. That's sad. Oh my gosh, getting all medieval up in this. I never played World of Warcraft. I played Warcraft 1 and 2, but I never got into the MMO scene and such. So do you still dabble in it a little bit? Maybe every once in a while, do you get an itch?
No, I've never really wanted to. They re-released WoW Classic a while ago, which was basically just the original game, except you could play it again. And I played that for about a month, and I was just like, nah. The magic's gone, so no. It became like a job. It was just too much work, like the social aspect and the responsibility and, you know, raiding three nights a week and you have to show up. It just, you know, it's work instead of a game, so.
Yeah, that's when it's not fun anymore. Mm-mm. 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 Well, you know, at least you always have the memories, right?
That's true. And I made a lot of friends through World of Warcraft, too, so.
Yeah, that's always good. Well, I'm going to disappoint you real hard.
Oh, no.
Because I wanted to ask you about dragons. One, because I wanted to ask you about dragons. And two, there's not really any method to my madness to why I asked you in relation to the wine, besides the fact I thought that it looked like the name dragon. So I was like, you know what? Okay. Fuck it. I'm going to ask her for fun facts about dragons because it's called Dagromis, and I was like, maybe that means dragons in Italian. I don't know, and I looked it up, and hard no, it does not. So it's actually named Gromis. Ooh, I rolled my R real hard there. Gromis is the family which owns the vineyard in the commune of Lamora, which is within the Barolo township where the wine is from.
Okay,
Lamora is. So within Lamora, you can have different single vineyards and such, as with Barolo, that become more desirable, like Canubi, Lamora, Monte Serafetta, or however you pronounce it. The family Gromis owned it through the 19th century before it was acquired by the Gaia family. And this is a sort of homage to the original owners that they named this wine after them. So, yay! Not as fun.
That's okay.
But you know what? We got to talk about dragons and video games, which absolutely I'm the worst at because I'm like, okay, we got to talk about alcohol. Then I always forget, like, fuck this shit. This is my podcast. I can talk about video games. Mm-hmm. I got video game stuff behind me. Like, let's talk about other nerdy stuff like that. So before we go into taste, one other fun fact, because this is a more like we talked about the Barolo Wars and stuff. This is a more modern style. Mm-hmm. So this is not one that needs to be aged for like a billion years. Mm-hmm. It's aged for 12 months in barriques and then 12 months in large oak.
Okay.
For Barolo, you do actually have to age it for a certain amount of time before you can release it.
Right.
The wines must be aged for at least 2 years in oak and then 1 year in bottle. So you're never going to get this year is like 2022. You're not going to get a 2021 bottle today.
Right.
You're going to get it in a couple years.
Oh, okay.
And then if it says Reserva on it, it has to be 5 years before release. So everything like that's released now is already 5 years old whenever the grapes were picked. So these bitches are old to begin with whenever you get them. Mm-hmm. So we don't need to wait too long. It's fine.
I actually wondered that about the year on the bottle. So the year on the bottle is when they start being aged in the bottle, not when they are actually released.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, it is the harvest year.
Okay.
So these were harvest and start, you know, they harvest in like, I guess depend on the weather. I think in Barolo, it's like around October they harvest them. So October of 2017, we grab these bad boys, throw them in vats, let them macerate for a week or so, and then put them in barrel or stainless steel to start maybe. But I think it's for Barolo, it's always barrel first. And it depends. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then let it hang out for a couple years and then let it hang out some more. And so we're like, okay, we can release it now. So yeah, there's a lot of rules and shit like that. Like, I don't care about. But we have been drinking.
We have been drinking. Let me
pour some. We have been drinking.
This thing is huge. It's very cumbersome to.
The decanters usually are. Mm-hmm. I didn't even have a decant.
My mom has this cool one that looks like a. What did Musty say? It looks like Master Chief's, like, does he have a blade?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the...
Yeah.
That sword that yeah. I don't... I'm playing through Halo right now, and I couldn't tell you what that fucking sword is called anyways. But yes, cheers. So this is our Barolo. Look at that beautiful brick color. Mm-hmm. So Barolo is really famous for having the color, being the color of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
would say that's pretty true about this. Like that kind of light, rosy, brickish. It's not purpley at all. It's more like a brownish red. Let's look at legs. Can we see legs? There's not much legs on this bad boy. Like, you can look at the glass. Like, yeah, there's not much legs, which is fine. I mean, like, dark legs.
Mm-hmm.
What do you smell? Kind of oaky cherry.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely feel that oak.
A little funky.
Not funky in a bad way, because I do not like funky wines. There's a lot of fruit in there.
I also smell other things, like the non-food things. Like, I don't know if it's tobacco or...
A little bit of tobacco leaf, for sure. It's got a nice nose. It's not...
It's not super strong.
It's not. I think that it's sort of muted. And the fact that it probably could, you know, it's a little early. It probably could have been aged some more, so to, like, mellow out, because Barolos can go through the sort of, like, sleepy time period, like, after, you know, they're released into the public world, like, you should wait a couple years again to drink or whatever. But yeah, let's taste.
All right.
Let's drink. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, that tannin. Coats the mouth. Right on the edges of the tongue. Very specific.
I don't know why that's pleasant. Like, if I was describing it, it would be like, it's like it's drying out my tongue. It's like, why is that good?
I don't know. I have no idea why. I mean, like, if it's way too much, I feel like it's too overpowering. It's like, I can't handle it. But this has a nice, like, softness to it as well, like, on the finish, that it's not, like, sucks all the moisture out of my mouth. Like, I think there's enough fruit in there, even though I do feel it's a little sleepy and it's not as fruit forward as I think it's intended to be. But I do think, like, that sort of tart red plum is really nice with it. There's still that feel of tobacco, a touch of leather.
Yeah.
Not funky in that Brettomyces way, because Brett is the bad boyfriend we don't want. Sorry, Brett's out there.
I'm so sorry, because Lily's drinking now, too. Anytime I'm on the mic, she's like, oh, it's time to drink right beside you? Yes?
Absolutely. Lily wants to taste, too. She just wants to participate. What do you think of this wine? Do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, it does what I like Barolos to do with the tannins and the acid. I feel like it could be, like, a little more robust. Like, I feel it's kind of... Especially as I drink it, it's sort of mellowing out.
Yeah, it's a little toned and tight, for sure. It needs maybe a little more air to stretch its legs. I didn't decant mine at all, so I just popped open the bottle about an hour ago and I said, fuck it, because I don't have a decanter. But I think with its age, that sort of tone and muted fruit notes will come through a bit more and be a little bit more plush, which I think will balance it out a bit. And it's this is what really sucks about wine, because how the fuck are you supposed to know that until you open a bottle?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's always such a crapshoot with things you're supposed to age. Like, have I opened it too early? I mean, it's better than opening it too late. As I found when my mom and I have our wine night, sometimes we go through her wine fridge and find something old, and it's like, waited a little long on this one.
Yeah, because then it just turns into flab. It's like, it's not interesting. It's like, I'd rather have the high acid of too early than a flabbiness of boring that is too late and, like, just dead in the bottle of vinegar.
Yeah.
Do you remember, do you have a favorite Barolo producer or favorite bottle that you've ever had?
No, I don't remember which specifics I've had before. I get sort of what's around at the liquor store when I can find it. A lot of places, like the liquor store near me, it's the Italian section sucks. It's just Chianti. And that's it. Occasionally, like, a Primitivo or something, which I do like, but, you know, there's not much of a selection. Not like the beautiful Queen's Quay LCBO that you sent this to, which is amazing. But I don't know.
Where I live now, in a state-controlled state like Pennsylvania, I have to special order this, because Barolos are, like, I'm so surprised that they're not more readily available in this market. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're such famous wines, but you get such, like, crappy selections at stores, and I'm like, what are people fucking drinking? Like, I don't understand. Like, We're drinking shitty Italian wines that cost $5. Like, come on. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, not everybody can afford this wine. This is definitely a treat. Mm-hmm. This bottle cost me $100 each.
Mm-hmm. It was 140 Canadian.
Yeah, 140 Canadian. So I was like, whew, fuck you, Canada. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can always tell that it's like a bougie bottle when you look on the back and it just like contains sulfites rather than like, this wine with notes of oak and tobacco, it goes good with gamey red meats.
Yes. I actually hate that on wine bottles.
Oh, really?
Like, I hate when they start telling, because it's so, it can really, like, I understand, like, for some people, they don't know what they're buying and they want to read something that tells them what it is, mm-hmm. so they know what they're getting themselves into. But that can be so, like, sway your opinion on the bottle just because it says it is. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, even though I feel like I do that all the time whenever I talk to people, like, I'll say words and it'll sway their opinion or whatever. I'd rather, you know, I think the wine industry is way too fucking convoluted mm-hmm. for people to understand to begin with. Like, nobody knows what the grape varietal in Barolo is. They're never going to say it on the label. They're never going to tell you any of these things that are interesting and how they're aged and what about it, unless you go research it. And who has time to do that as a basic consumer unless you, you know, have it written on the bottle and say, like, it's tobacco and that it's mm-hmm. these cherry notes, but you may not taste that in that wine. Like, I don't taste blueberries or anything, but sometimes mm-hmm. they'll be like, oh, it's blueberry. And I'm like, fuck you. I don't taste blueberry. I don't know. I like a very simple label. But again, I think it just comes from me being bougie as fuck. Mm. So,
it's very subjective, like what you smell, mm-hmm. what you taste, especially when it's things that aren't food. Like, I find those especially, yeah. it's just a little strange. But I don't mind when that's on the bottle because then I'll, like, smell it and I'll, like, look for those things. And sometimes, like, oh, mm-hmm. yeah, I get that. Some of the food pairings, I mean, I guess they can be useful for people who don't sort of know their varietals. But a lot of it's, like, you can drink most wines with most foods.
Yes, fuck that shit. Like, people get so, like, particular about, oh, what goes well with this? I'm like, I don't know, cheese.
Mm-hmm. A bag of potato chips.
Yeah, fucking, I'll eat some fucking popcorn with this bullshit. I don't give a fuck. That's what, like, always kills me. Like, I think some foods, like, I mean, you just sort of go with, like, generalizations whenever you're going with wine pairings. Like, I probably wouldn't have a light white fish with this. Mm-hmm. But that's just because it's red.
Yeah.
You know, like, any reds, I feel like you shouldn't really have a light white fish and a light wine sauce or something mm-hmm. like that. You know what I mean? But that's just sort of like it's fine. Mm-hmm. But the biggest rule that I've tried to follow with wine pairings, if it grows together, it goes together. Mm-hmm. So if you're in Barolo, drinking Barolo wines, have local food or, you know, have pasta or whatever it is local to the region, charcuterie or something, and then it'll go together. Like, that just, it just makes sense because the people who are making this wine are eating those foods and they want to have something that goes well with their foods. Mm-hmm. Just eat what the fucking locals are eating. Don't make it complicated.
So I was reading when I was looking at my Barolo fun facts that, hundreds of years ago, Barolo was very different, and it was sort of like a mm-hmm. fruity thing. Some people even used it as a cold medicine, and it sounded like a very completely different wine, like not tannic, not acidic, very sort of, I don't know, almost sweet, maybe? Like, it sounded...
Yeah. It's strange how wines are not the same throughout history like that. Like, it goes through phases and changes, like, how it could, I think, but for most, like, most things with alcohol, a lot of them start as medicinal things, so mm-hmm. having it be, like, sweet for cops or totally makes sense. But Barolo really didn't get its sort of recognition and notoriety and expensiveness within the last, like, I want to say 50 to 80 years. Mm-hmm. So, like, before that is just junk wine.
Yeah.
You know, and we're just going to make some shitty sweet wine or whatever it is, you know, like, mm-hmm. whatever. And then it just sort of evolved into the big tannic shit and then evolved into the more fruit-forward approachable wine then. And, you know, and then you still have the differences between the two. So it's like, it's interesting to hear, especially regions outside of France, because I feel like France is the only one where wines have mostly stayed consistent throughout history. And I think a lot of that has to do with the people, like, one, the AOCs and the governing boards that tell them they have to fucking do this and have been around since, like, the 1800s or whatever, mm-hmm. and monks writing shit down to tell you how to do these things, versus, like, Barolo, there weren't monks there that were writing shit down in the 1300s and 1400s telling you what soils and such to do here and how to make this wine to make it the best it possibly can be. So we just said, fuck it, we're gonna go through waves and figure out shit until we like it, mm-hmm. you know? And it sucks because it may have been sweet in the 1800s and it sort of transitions because people's tastes change, but also because, like, a winemaker, like, say I'm making wine mm-hmm. in the 1800s, and then my kids start making wine, they'll may use my philosophies, but they may want to start doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of just, like, changes as your generations go forward. Also because why not? Mm. You know, like, it doesn't have to stay the same, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
And also, like, someone influential will take a liking to it, and all of a sudden it's the mm-hmm. the hot new thing. Like,
oh yeah,
like with lobster, how it was like a trash fish that poor people ate, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, lobster, yeah, this is gonna be the new expensive thing.
Mm-hmm. And then they put lobsters in Elden Ring and you go, fuck you, lobster. Worst freaking enemy in the game. Lobsters. Oh. I'm dying on that hill.
So when I first came across the crabs, I was like, okay, there were some of these in the other games. But then I came across actual lobsters. I was like, oh, okay. And isn't it weird how when you fight... Actually, it's not even the lobsters or the crab. It's those big, like, tentacly guys. And they drop one land something ovary. Just like,
yeah, ovary egg
thing. You drop one ovary. I've killed this monster. Here is an ovary.
not two.
Just one.
One. It kept the other mm-hmm. one. It's fine.
All that remains of this monster is this one ovary.
Yes. Oh, goodness. Oh, well, thank you so much again for joining me, Pam, and drinking this lovely bottle of wine with me. Even though, I'm going to be real, it's not my favorite. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I don't care. It's still well-made, mm-hmm. I think. If it had a couple more years in bottle, even be more fantastic. Gaia, again, is a famous producer that if you see G-A-J-A on a bottle just across the board, just like, you know, it's going to be quality.
Okay.
It's probably going to be quality. So... But yeah, thank you. Did you learn anything?
I did learn things. Yes, that was great. I enjoyed this very much. Thank you for the bottle of wine, and thank you for inviting me on again.
Yes, always. You're my wine girl. Always gonna have you on, because who else am I gonna splurge about randomness of wine with somebody? But then, like, you know, because all these boys just want to drink straight alcohol and whiskey. I'm like, you guys suck. Let's drink some wine. Yeah. Freaking boys. But yes, Pam, plug yourself. I mean...
Oh, yeah, I'm Pam. You can find me on YouTube. My channel is called Cannot Be Tamed. I talk about old video games, new video games, whatever video games I feel like talking about. I also stream on Twitch somewhat sporadically. Generally, Thursday nights and Sunday afternoons are my thing, but sometimes I don't feel like streaming, or I do a surprise stream, so I'm very unpredictable. Also, tend to do adventure games on Sunday and indie games on Thursdays, so.
Yeah, you were playing, like, Sherlock recently, right?
Yes, yeah. The Lost Files of Sherlock Holmes, The Case of the Rose Tattoo. I'm close to the end. Last time I played it, the game softlocked, like, something that needed to happen wasn't triggering, so I got very upset, and I was like, fuck this game, and I ended the stream. But I went back, and... I think it's going to be okay now, so I should be able to finish it on Sunday.
Oh, I fucking hate soft locks with the holy passion. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just must have done something out of order or whatever. So, yeah. Mm. But it's almost done. It's a cool game. It's got, like, the FMV sort of characters, which I really like. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's been pretty good, other than the issue.
Well, thank you, Pam. I super appreciate you coming on here and drinking with me. Yes,
always.
And cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining, everyone. You can find me on Twitter at PD's Power Hour, or you can email me your questions, comments, or concerns to pdspowerhour@gmail.com. And if you like what you heard here, head over to polymedianetwork.com to my more fun podcasts like Tales of Lesser Medium, Polykill, Drunk Friend, and Indie Quest. And if you want to help out the show, please rate and review on your preferred listening application. Just takes a minute and really helps out the show. Drink well, my friends. Bye!